Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Pennsylvania spoke and Hillary Clinton lives to battle on.
It's a long road to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and it runs right through the heart of Pennsylvania.
Barack Obama urged supporters not to lose sight of what's at stake.
We believe that the challenges we face are bigger than the smallness of our politics. And we know that this election is our chance to change it.
The political brawl now heads to Indiana and North Carolina. This hour On Point. What just happened in Pennsylvania and now what? We've got a great panel with us today. Joining me first from Washington is Celinda Lake, Democratic strategist and president of Lake Research Partners. She's co-author of What Women Want. Welcome, Celinda. Nice to have you.
Jane, nice to be here. Thank you.
With us also from New York is Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst for Time Magazine. Welcome back to you, Mark.
Great to talk to you, Jane.
Celinda, first impressions the day after.
Well, obviously Hillary Clinton had a big victory last night, and I think the margin was such that it can help propel her into stronger, another victory perhaps in Indiana, and stronger margins in North Carolina and Oregon than had been anticipated. Clearly, Barack Obama wanted to keep that margin around 5%, and she beat that. You also saw record high turnout among women voters. You saw an 14-point margin among women for her, as well as older and non-college-educated voters. And you saw her make a strong argument about who's ready to lead. And I think it left some questions on the table that Barack Obama will need to answer in the next states he goes into.
Mark Halperin, break the numbers down for us. Celinda did just for a moment. But what do those numbers tell us about the strengths and the weaknesses of these two candidates?
Well, in terms of appealing to voting blocks, they have mirror strengths and weaknesses. Obama continues to be a candidate of younger voters, African-American voters, well-educated voters, voters who want change, and voters who care a lot about the Iraq War. Senator Clinton continues to be the candidate of working-class voters, women voters, Catholic voters, older voters, I may have said, and also voters who care a lot about the economy and health care. The difficulty for the party is that despite her big win in Pennsylvania, despite her, I think, very strong argument about winning in almost all of the big states, Senator Obama's lead amongst the elected delegates is the major reality of this contest. And while if I were a Democrat, I would be deeply troubled by his failure to appeal to the particularly working class voters and white voters as a matter of his viability in the general election, the nomination is still very much his unless something extraordinary happens. Senator Clinton lives to fight for at least two more weeks, but she's not in much a stronger position than she was before Pennsylvania.
Celinda, do you agree or disagree? Was Senator Clinton's win sufficient to alter the dynamics of this race?
Well, I think that the analysis was exactly right. I mean, I think that and you're going to have some states that are pretty strong for Barack Obama. I mean, Pennsylvania was a perfect storm for her because she has some history there. She and President Clinton had been there a lot as president, worked it hard, and it was the perfect set of demographics for an older state, a Catholic state. She had the endorsements. Now she's headed into some states that are much tougher demographics for, North Carolina and Oregon particularly. And I think it's very hard for her to catch up in delegates, and I think the superdelegates have a very hard time taking it away from the person who has the most delegates and the most votes.
Well, Mark Halperin, what are the superdelegates thinking right now? What kind of pressure are they feeling?
Well, the first superdelegate to react in the wake of the results in Pennsylvania was the governor of Oklahoma, a state Hillary Clinton won overwhelmingly, and he came out for Barack Obama. So I suspect that there are other superdelegates who the Obama campaign, if not had in their back pocket, at least had pretty clear sense that they'd eventually be for them. And I think one of the things you'll see in the coming days is, as part of a very skillful and skilled Obama operation, is the rolling out of some superdelegates to send the message that Obama is moving inexorably towards the majority of delegates needed and that Obama is the strongest candidate, even if he's not winning these big states. Now, I think Senator Clinton's strategy is to win enough of the upcoming contest to keep Obama from getting to that majority, have enough superdelegates who say they want to wait beyond June into the convention. But it's going to be very difficult for her because many of these superdelegates, rather than being persuaded by the big state argument, which, again, I think is her most persuasive argument, want to see her take the lead in the popular vote without the benefit of the Michigan results and the Florida results, which are controversial, being counted. Even with her big win in Pennsylvania, she's unlikely to take the lead in the popular vote. And that, again, is going to give superdelegates real pause in terms of going against Obama with his clear lead amongst the elected delegates.
You know, I've heard a lot of people say if Obama is the one who is getting the big endorsements, who's pulling out the crowds, who's raising the most money, why can't he knock it out of the park? Why can't he, as Hillary Clinton herself put it last night, seal the deal? Celinda Lake?
Well, I think that he has three problems. I think that he's had a problem really consolidating an economic message. He's definitely led in terms of a change message, but in terms of an economic message, he's still losing the voters who tend to be more blue-collar, who care about the economy, and I think the whole bitter controversy was a setback for him. The second problem he's had is that he's had problems with women voters, white women voters, and I think they need more of a women's strategy. They need to close that margin. In Pennsylvania, he lost white women voters by 2-1. And that's 66 to 34. Now, Hillary Clinton has some real appeal among women voters, particularly older, non-college white women, but he needs to cut into that. And then finally, I would say that he needs to reassure people on the leadership quotient. And I think he does, he did better, it's interesting, he did a better job on this in Iowa than he has done since then, I think, perhaps because he had a longer time to campaign. But he had a real economic message in Iowa that appealed to older non-college voters. He had better support among women voters. And I think as he moves quickly through states with his message of really creating a movement and change, he's had a little bit tougher time developing those profiles, which take longer exposure. It's obviously a disappointment, I think, to them that they weren't able to do it in Pennsylvania because they had had a big break between the campaigns. And I think that a retool of Hillary Clinton campaign really put them under pressure.
Mark Halperin, Celinda Lake mentions these challenges in some of these key, crucial voting blocks. Can Barack Obama win in November without the blue-collar vote, without the women? Can he take it?
I don't think he can. I think he'll have to do a lot better than he's done. And remember, Hillary Clinton is not necessarily your ideal candidate to appeal to these working-class voters. Many of them have skepticism about her. Now, a lot of them are women voters where she's been strong, not just because she's appealing to the notion of an historic first candidate. But she's not losing these voters to John Edwards. He's losing them to Hillary Clinton. And the thing about John McCain is he has shown historically a great appeal to those kind of voters. Now, I think the current polling, including the exit poll in Pennsylvania that showed very large numbers of Clinton supporters saying that they would either vote for McCain or sit out, and even larger numbers or also large numbers of Obama supporters saying that. I think those are overstated. As one of our colleagues said, it's like asking a couple who's having a huge fight in December what their Valentine's Day plans are. They're probably not going to say we're going to go out for a big romantic dinner. By November, most Democrats will get back together, but not all of them. And John McCain, for all of his troubles with the Iraq war and the economy and everything else, has great appeal to the kind of voters who Obama is having trouble reaching, Catholic voters. And for all the talk of the Obama campaign of expanding the map, of putting red states in play that Senator Clinton can't put into play, I think that list is exaggerated. The second state on the list is Colorado, and I think McCain will be a strong candidate there. So we get back to, again, for all the talk of expanding the map, can Obama, if he's the nominee, win three out of four of Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Michigan, none of which he's won against Senator Clinton?
Celinda Lake, what do you think? Now that Clinton's won Pennsylvania, what about that big state argument? Win Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Texas, and on and on, that the Democrats need that to bring victory in November.
They do need that. Ironically, I think the biggest issue is that in these small states is where McCain is really putting the Democrats under pressure right now. I mean, he's ahead in New Mexico right now because he's been running television. I think that Mark is right that Colorado's a real battleground, Nevada a real battleground. They've already embarked on a small state strategy. So they're going to put pressure in big states and small states. I think McCain has a lot of trouble with his economic arguments in the big industrial states. But I think the problem is that I don't think Obama has established a clear economic profile either. Now, I tend to agree with Mark that by the fall, Democrats will be consolidated. It's more a question of these blue-collar independent voters. And, of course, Pennsylvania was tough on Obama because independents were not allowed to vote. He actually does better with independents. So I think it's going to be a close presidential race. I don't care who we nominated. But I think that Obama definitely needs to establish more credentials with older voters and establish more credentials on the economy.
All right. And beyond that, in the next 30 seconds here before we go to break, at the next battlegrounds of North Carolina and Indiana, what's the outlook there? Celinda?
Well, in North Carolina, Obama's had a 15 to 16 point average lead, and he's helped a lot there by the fact that there's a very significant African-American population. In Indiana, the polls have been bouncing all over the place. Until the last couple of polls, Hillary Clinton was ahead. The last two polls had Obama ahead by 5 points. I think that Pennsylvania does influence Indiana and the blue-collar strategy, the older strategy. It's a similar kind of electorate to Pennsylvania. So I think it's anybody's call who wins there. If you average all the polls, Hillary Clinton's about 2 points ahead, but it could go either way.
Celinda Lake, Democratic strategist and president of Lake Research Partners. Thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it, Celinda.
Thank you for having me.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about the bruising battle for the Democratic nomination after Pennsylvania. Democrats, is this fierce battle good for the party? Republicans, what's your take from the sidelines? We're speaking this hour with Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst for Time magazine. He writes The Page for Time.com. And I'd like now to bring two more voices into our conversation. With me in the studio is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. Welcome as always, Jack.
Hi, Jane.
And from Washington, Ruth Marcus, columnist for The Washington Post. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes.
Hi, everybody. Hi.
So Obama still holds the lead in total popular vote, as we've heard, as well as pledged delegates. What is the path to the nomination for Hillary Clinton? Ruth?
Well, it's very uphill, as Mark and Celinda were saying earlier. I feel like, and this may be an appropriate analogy for Pennsylvania, the primary last night was Groundhog Day. We're in pretty much precisely the same position we were before. Things are not that much clearer or that much less clear, and she continues to not have the popular vote lead, not have a delegate lead, not have a kind of obvious mathematical path or even a plausible mathematical path to a delegate lead in the upcoming primaries. And so that leaves superdelegates, and that seems like a very long shot to me.
But Jack, as long as Senator Clinton continues posting victories like Pennsylvania, how hard is it going to be for the Democratic Party officials to make the case that it's time for her to go, close down shop?
I think it does make it difficult. People can say that voters are having buyer's remorse about Obama, that his victories were in the first flush of enthusiasm for this new candidate, but as the campaign has worn on, Democratic voters have liked him less and less. It's a powerful argument. If the polls showed that he was doing dramatically worse than Hillary vis-a-vis McCain, I think it would make a real point. He's not. And they're both doing about the same. And I don't expect that would change. And then, of course, for them to be partial to that kind of reasoning, they have to throw what's called democracy out the window if he's ahead in delegates and in the popular vote. Now, there was an interview last night with Terry McAuliffe where he seemed to be putting all his emphasis on the popular vote, that he seemed to be saying, look, if we can catch him there, never mind the delegates, that's a very powerful argument, especially with the critique the Clinton people have been making about caucuses and the way caucuses are skewed against really ordinary people. You just can't get to them. It's very difficult mm-hmm. for people who work nights and waitresses and policemen and so on. So if she can catch him there, I think that does give them something to talk about. Whether that's possible or not, I don't know.
Mark Halperin, what's your take on that?
Well,
Senator Clinton is looking for arguments to make to the superdelegates. I think the popular vote argument is silly. There's no question that Senator Obama has gotten a lot of delegates from these small state contests. There's no question that her strength in the big states, in terms of running a popular vote, is somewhat at least indicative of a general election strength. But Obama's delegate lead is based on the rules of how you get nominated. You don't get nominated by winning the popular vote. However, it is clear that the reason Terry McAuliffe and others are so prone to emphasize this is because their conversations, their private conversations with superdelegates, often go like this. They'll say, you know, be for Hillary. She'd be stronger against McCain. She'd be a better president. And the superdelegate will say, I can't be because Obama is winning the elected delegates and my constituents or African-Americans or other Democrats will be upset with me if I do this. I need some argument to make. And frequently they point to the popular vote. They say, if you win the popular vote, I can say to people, well, yes, Obama won the elected delegates, but Clinton won the popular vote, and that's democracy at work. That's why they're struggling so hard to make that argument and why they're struggling so hard to include the disputed votes from Florida and Michigan, because without those, she has no chance of overtaking him in even the popular vote. And unless they come in an extraordinary way, she can't overtake him, of course, in the elected delegates either.
Ruth Marcus, superdelegates were hoping this might be over last night. You know, is this going to convention? I mean, is that where this is heading?
It's certainly not over last night. I doubt that it's headed all the way to the convention because, and maybe this is the triumph of hope over experience, but things are going to clear up at some point. I think Indiana will clear things up in a few weeks more than Pennsylvania ended up doing. I think that, though, to go back to the popular vote question, I think I agree with Mark that that's a little bit of a silly metric, but it's kind of a proxy for the real argument that the Clinton campaign needs to make and the one that could ultimately help them win, which is that which I think is unlikely, which is that Senator Obama has simply shown by his deficits among certain groups of voters that he is by far the less strong candidate, so the Clinton argument goes, in the fall against John McCain, that the working class white voters, that the Catholic voters, that these swing voters in swing states that a Democrat is going to need to take in order to win the election, that Hillary Clinton has shown herself stronger in those. The results from Ohio and Pennsylvania were on Clinton's side there, but perhaps not so decisively so that the superdelegates will be convinced to overturn both the popular vote and the delegate count.
Jack Beatty.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to take a lot of, and these are elected officials. They have to face the electorate, and it's very difficult to go to them and say, well, we've just essentially taken the nomination away from the first viable African-American candidate because we don't think he can win. And the voters thought he could by the majority or by a narrow margin in the delegate count, but we don't think so. That is just poison. And I think that, to me, the significant news in that respect in recent days has been Nancy Pelosi's comment that come early June, after the last primary, she's going to push her 233 members to stand and deliver. She's going to say, now you are going to decide it. You're all superdelegates. You can decide it because by some projections, Obama will be within 100 or 200 votes at most of nomination. And you can decide it right now. And I expect that there'll be a lot of that.
Mark Halperin, this campaign has turned incredibly negative, as you well know. Has that weakened Obama or Clinton more for a general election fight?
Well, I wouldn't say it's become incredibly negative. We've seen more negative campaigns. It certainly Pennsylvania was the first time where negative ads, at least towards the end of the contest, were the rule rather than the exception. Wisconsin was the only other state that saw them on television. I think that Senator Obama continues to get an easier time. You see a New York Times editorial basically saying all this negativity is the fault of Senator Clinton, when in fact there are certain measurements you could use to argue that the Obama campaign has been at least as negative and perhaps more so. Both of them have had their images scuffed up. Senator Clinton's unfavorability rating, what people tell pollsters about whether they find her to be truthful, all headed in the wrong direction for her. And it's a position from which it will be difficult to win a general election in the abstract. Senator Obama's ratings have also been hurt, but not as much. And I think one of the strong arguments the Obama campaign makes about their electability is he does have a cleaner slate on which to run. Now, Senator Clinton argues that the Republicans would do a big job and a good job of defining Senator Obama, maybe perhaps even better than she has. And I think both of them can recover from what's happened up until now. The danger, I believe, particularly for Senator Obama, is that John McCain and his forces are being able to sit back now and watch Senator Clinton go after Obama and say, well, what's worked and what hasn't? How can we take advantage of that lesson? And I think while Obama may not be irreparably damaged now by any means, he's being set up for a strong attack by well-rested John McCain.
Well, let's talk about John McCain, Ruth Marcus. He's had 2 months now essentially to raise money and solidify his base. What's the talk in his campaign today?
Well, you know, they've been confused, actually, or divided about which candidate they'd prefer to run against. And they've been quite enjoying the luxury that they've had to raise money, to introduce or reintroduce themselves to voters, to develop and redevelop and fine-tune and change his economic message. And as Mark was saying, the Democratic candidates are doing some of his work for him, whoever the nominee turns out to be. The McCain campaign will have multiple sound bites and video clips that it can use one Democrat's words against the other. I think that in terms of the tarnishing of either Senator Obama or Senator Clinton, that was going to come in the fall campaign, and to some extent it's helpful to see it now for people to assess the potential damage that could create. On the other hand, it is a lot more powerful to have one Democratic presidential candidate criticizing the other and to use those words even in a general election campaign than it is to have the attacks from somebody from the opposite party.
Jack, quickly, then we'll go to phones.
Still, you have to wonder, whose hand would you rather have, any Democrat this year or any Republican? Bush is now the least popular American president since Harry Truman left office. Harry Truman left office with the assurance that his reputation would be redeemed. Bush will have no such assurance, and an economy that is in recession with inflation in basic commodities like gas and food, and a very unpopular war to which John McCain has pledged, if necessary, to keep troops there for 100 years. I wouldn't want that hand.
To the phones now, Andrew, who is calling first from Northampton, Massachusetts. Andrew, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
A quick side comment. Saying it should be a popular vote is like a losing football team claiming that the winner should be determined by total yardage. What I really wanted to say is that seeing as Barack Obama has, for all intents and purposes, already won the nomination, as long as they keep holding primaries, then the question becomes about whether Hillary Clinton should quit and go home. And that's an argument she can actually win, and I believe that's about the only argument she can win. And in the world of Democratic voters, no one wants her to go home.
Andrew, thank you. Mark Halperin, do you want to respond?
Well, one of the, you know, I go back and forth about how much damage this is doing to the Democrats' chances now. I'm a little bit less hopeful for them because I think you see strong feelings. The press is a fascination with the Obama story. It's quite common to see stories about how loyal his supporters are and for people to say, well, if Obama's not the nominee, younger voters will stay home and his supporters are part of a movement rather than a normal campaign. Senator Clinton has supporters like that, too. And last night, I thought it was interesting. When Senator Obama's name came up at her victory night event, there was booing. That has been common at Obama events as far back as Iowa and New Hampshire when Senator Clinton's name came up. But you're seeing a Democratic Party divided, according to the results so far, 52-48 for Obama, but in some ways 50-50 between two popular candidates within their own wings. And because of some of the demographic splits we talked about earlier, there's some real cultural and other demographic splits that I think are causing a lot of passion, and again, making it more difficult for the party to come back together, unless assuming that the loser quickly and fully embraces the winner.
Ruth Marcus, do you think that there could still be a Democratic dream ticket? Obama, Clinton, Clinton, Obama?
I'm not dreaming about a dream ticket. I don't really see that happening, and I'm not sure I think it would be a very good idea. I do agree with Jack's point that if you had to choose just based on, just basic factual factors, which party you'd rather be rooting for or which one you think has a better chance, you'd have to sort of line it up with the Democrats. But this is clearly taking a toll. The question is how much of a toll. The question is how dissatisfied will the other side be? Certainly not the losing side, if it's Clinton or Obama. How dissatisfied will those voters be? Clearly not as much as they think they are now, but clearly some. Mm-hmm. And the longer that goes on for Democrats, the more trouble they are in and the better John McCain's admittedly weak hand becomes.
Another phone call now from Lee, who's in Medford, Massachusetts. Lee, welcome to On Point.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I think the reason why Obama can't close the deal is because I think his organization is better than he is. I think everything people say about him is true. He's charismatic. He's brilliant. But he's younger than Clinton, and he strikes me as somebody who doesn't know what it feels like to lose. And he seemed so drained in that last debate. And I just thought to myself, this guy's dying on the paddle, and, you know, he hasn't even hit the big show yet. I don't care which person is the nominee. I'm a committed Democrat. I'll vote for whoever is at the top of my ticket. But I really, really worry about his weakness in the general election. And at this point, I'm supporting Hillary. My husband and I are going to donate money to her today because I'm worried about the general, and that's the only thing I care about. And there's a lot of talk here about him having the support of younger voters, but historically, they don't tend to turn out, if the commentators are to be believed, they don't tend to turn out as loyally as the older demographic that supports Hillary. And the last thing I'd like to say on the issue of superdelegates is there's hypocrisy on both sides. I'm in Massachusetts. She won in Massachusetts in a big way, yet Kennedy and Kerry are supporting her. So, I mean, one could argue that, sure, superdelegates can go whichever way they want. This notion that the superdelegates should support the people and the popular vote, I'm not seeing that in my state. I think the superdelegates are there for situations just like this.
Mm. Lee, thanks. That's great comments. I appreciate it. Jack, you're shaking your head. Go ahead. Jump in.
I think she really outlined the field there of possibilities. And the sense about Obama that he's not tough enough, I think Hillary is really playing on that. And she does give off the vibration of a person of tremendous resilience. You know, she's someone with immense self-righteousness. This is what all the biographers say, anyway, and immense ruthlessness. That's a great combination. That allows you to really, do whatever you have to do to win and still feel justified. And she just gives off that bristling kind of self-assurance and energy. And she's saying to voters, listen, I'm a lot like you. I've been down and I know what it's like. And I get up and she's making a similitude between herself and them and their struggles, whereas the effortless seeming Obama doesn't seem to give off that. And yet when you look at their lives, he's had more struggle. He was he did have a much harder life than she did. And both equally, stellar in terms of their academic credentials. But he's had he had much more struggle. And he needs somehow, I think, to connect with that.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking post-Pennsylvania politics and how Democrats are going to pick their nominee. We're speaking this hour with Ruth Marcus, columnist at The Washington Post, Mark Halperin, senior political editor at Time Magazine, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. Mark Halperin, I'm curious. Jack Beatty and I were talking during the break, and Jack brought up the point, you know, why the hard feelings between Obama and Clinton? You know, it's not like there are many ideological differences. Why the bad blood? Where's this coming from?
Well, partly I think it's any time you've got competition that goes on for this long amongst two people who are flat out exhausted and who neither of whom wants to lose. They're both competitive. I think that's part of it. Senator Clinton, I think, feels that this nomination is being taken away from her by someone who she believes is not ready to be president and who she believes does not cannot beat John McCain. And I think she particularly resents some of her close friends and longtime associates of both her and her husband supporting Obama. I think she takes that out a little bit on him. I think Senator Obama resents Senator Clinton's continued presence in the race. And I think he feels that she does not show him or the political movement he's put together very much respect, and I think he resents that.
Mm. Jack, go ahead.
What about the supporters, Mark? Why the bad blood there that we see in the polls? What, you know, there aren't the ideological differences that you often get in Democratic primaries. Why the bad blood between the supporters?
Well, I think to some extent it reflects, as I said before, the demographic differences between them. I think, for instance, you see a lot of younger people who think now is the time, as Obama says, to follow him to change the country with the new generation of leadership. And I think you see some older Democrats who just find that to be wrong and that Obama's not ready to be president. I think also part of it is the historic firsts. And the great debate that's gone on, of course, before this election, but which I get embroiled in all the time about sexism and racism and opportunities for non-white people to run for president and to be president. And I think those who feel more strongly about one of the two firsts, I think out in watching voters and to see where the anger comes from, I think part of it derives from that. But it's also just the length of the contest and the fact that this is, unless you think they'll somehow team up as a ticket, this is not a divisible prize. Again, it's competition.
Ruth Marcus, I'm curious, what did you see yesterday in the numbers? Was this a vote for issues, or was this about flag pins and misspeaks? I mean, what mattered to voters? Was this a gut check? Who do you like? Character and all the rest?
Are there issues in this campaign? I seem to have forgotten them, if they ever existed. And, you know, we could have a 17-minute discussion about the merits of an individual mandate on health care or not. I think, and I don't mean to discount this, because I think character does matter for voters. I think your sense of connection with a presidential candidate does matter and is legitimate. Voters were these candidates are so close on issues that I think it would be silly for voters to some extent to make a decision between the two of them based on issues. And so they are checking their guts, and the ones that are motivated by change are heading towards Senator Obama. That's no surprise. The ones who are motivated by experience are heading towards Senator Clinton. Those are fewer. And I wanted to go back to one thing that a caller said earlier, which is the question of the younger voters and whether they will turn out. The argument has always been in previous elections, you know, everybody's always sort of chasing after the youth vote and it never materializes. Well, Senator Obama has proved conclusively what Governor Dean could not really prove in the last presidential election, which is he can turn out the youth vote. So the argument that they won't turn out in the fall, I think, has been true in past elections. And I think now you have to say, well, he did it once. There's certainly every likelihood that if he's the nominee, he could do it again.
Let's get some more callers in here. Sue is on the line from Des Moines, Iowa. Sue, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Hey, you know, this demographic analysis by the media is so unhelpful and almost ludicrous. I am over 40. I'm a white female, and I was independent until 2000. I voted with the Democrats, and I considered both candidates thoroughly at the beginning of this campaign. But, you know, Hillary Clinton's Karl Rovian-style politics that have totally denigrated the process has really turned me off. The whole point is, Barack Obama has demonstrated a kind of thoughtfulness and intelligence the whole American political process has been lacking. And as far as clinging to guns and religion, with Hillary's Karl Rovian-style politics. That's what she's promoting. So she's winning with dirty points. And the reason why, you know, maybe working class or that are going to cling to her is because a lot of her protectionist-style economics might be appealing to them, but not necessarily best for the country. I think Barack Obama is too thoughtful to make protectionist statements that and about his health care to realize that, you know, her policy is never going to pass through Congress and that kind of thing. I think she has denigrated the process in her lack of intelligent conversation, her desperation in doing the Karl Rove-style politics. I think it maybe worked in Pennsylvania, but there's a few of us intelligent people left that don't fit the demographics that the media is saying. And as far as the math goes, it's like comparing apples to oranges to split points between two candidates and then say how either one of them is going to do in the general election. It's ridiculous.
Sue, thanks so much for your call.
Jane?
Yes, Ruth, Marcus, go ahead.
Can I jump in? Because I saw an opening to actually discuss issues, which is the caller was talking about protectionist-style politics. I think that watching this and caring a lot about free trade, nobody could really, the argument about trade, both of the candidates say, oh, okay, I'm a really big believer in free trade. And then both of them have been saying, I think, irresponsible and incorrect things about NAFTA and the Colombia Free Trade Agreement and other free trade agreements. Neither one of them has been responsible when it comes to trade. And people like me just have to hope that they don't actually mean what they're saying on trade. But I don't see really a dime's worth of difference between them in terms of their irresponsibility on the subject. In terms of demographics, certainly it's true that there are voters who, like this caller, do not fit within that demographic model. But it is striking in state after state how much the demographics predict with precision where you will fall in the Clinton-Obama divide.
Jack Beatty, go ahead.
Yeah, on the trade thing, I have to disagree with you, Ruth. I mean, yes, NAFTA, it's hard to make an argument that that's really hurt the economy. But when the China deal came up under the Clinton administration, 48 of the 52 Democratic congressmen, basically from Pennsylvania out to the Mississippi River and north to Michigan, voted against it. And they did it for a reason, because they knew it was going to hurt their people. It was going to hurt industrial workers. It did. It has. And that's just a fact. Polls show now that as many as, I think, close to 60% of even Republicans think the trade is on the whole bad for America. Now, maybe they're wrong, Ruth. And maybe, you know, a certain training in Adam Smith can right them. But I don't think so. I think it's the felt experience of many Americans that the China price is bidding down all wages. And I think that on the Colombia thing, I mean, really, they specialize in shooting labor organizers down there, don't they? By the hundreds. Should we really be doing a deal with a company, with a country that where, you know, if you're trying to organize a union, you get shot and your murderer doesn't get prosecuted? I don't know about that.
All right, back to the phones now. Sam is in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Sam, welcome to you.
Yes, hello. I need an hour, but I'm telling you, I'm an angry Hillary Clinton Democrat.
All right.
First of
How
all,
come?
If I was a superdelegate, I'd add up the total vote in the 48 states, minus the other two that aren't counted, Washington, D.C., and the territories. And if Barack Obama had the more popular votes, I'd vote for him. But number one, caucuses are unfair. If you're fat, if you're old, if you're sick, you can't go. Number two, he's afraid to have a re-vote in Florida and Michigan because he would lose. He would lose. And the donut shop I go to, we're all poor working class Democrats. We're all voting for McCain. And I'm 56 years old and I've never voted for a Republican in my life.
Sam, thank you. Thank you so much. Mark, do you want to respond?
Well, the guy's got the talking points down.
Yeah.
Caucuses, I think caucuses, you can make an argument they are unfair. Not everybody can participate, but them's are the rules. And Senator Clinton knew what the rules are, and people can talk about reforming the system. There's going to be a conference up at Harvard next week where people are going to talk about that. But that's not for a talk for 2008. I think Senator Clinton is going to have a lot of regrets if she doesn't win the nomination. The biggest one, will probably be a failure to have a plan to win enough delegates in those caucuses, however undemocratic she and her supporters now think they are.
I'm curious how, on another note, Bill Clinton has affected this race, specifically in the last 6 weeks. Ruth or Mark, what do you think?
I think that his role on balance has not been a positive one for Senator Clinton. He's popped off and saying some things in ways that she had to step in and say, well, I'm the candidate here and he's not speaking for me. And I think his comments after South Carolina were troubling. And I think that while the former president remains incredibly popular among Democrats, there is a desire not to go back to some of the more troublesome aspects of the Clinton presidency. And I think that President Clinton's lack of discipline has served more than I would have expected to remind people of the downside of the first Clinton and possibly the only Clinton presidency.
Jane, is he a frequent listener to your program, President Clinton? Do you know? I wouldn't.
I'm going to get an angry phone call.
I wouldn't want him to hear me say this because I don't like those angry calls. But I believe now it's an unquestionable argument that he is a net negative. At critical times, he has really hurt her. And while he's raised lots of money for her, and she wouldn't be in this position to be a potential president without being her being his wife, he has really hurt her at critical times in ways that have fundamentally undermined her candidacy.
Go ahead, Jack.
And not to be too Freudian, but is this because he unconsciously doesn't want her to win? I mean, has he been subverting her? Is this part of their I was going to say passion play. I guess that's what it is. I don't know, but it just seems that every time something's going on, he will make a remark, whether it's about the Bosnia sniper or something else, that will seem to be subverting her.
You know, we can't really get into the psycho babble type consciousness. But I've thought about that question, Jack. I kind of think it's almost the opposite. He is so devoted to trying to make amends and helping her win the presidency, and so incapable of seeing how a rational person could look at the two candidates and not choose his wife, that I think that that's led him to go overboard and to lose control and lose discipline rather than the sort of subconscious desire to torpedo her candidacy. But that's my, you know, armchair analysis.
Before we run out of time here, I want to bring up Iraq, of course, have been a big campaign issue. News just crossed the wire through the Associated Press that General David Petraeus, the four-star general who's been leading troops, of course, in Iraq, has been tapped to become the next commander of U.S. Central Command. So I'm wondering, Ruth, how that issue is playing to Democratic voters now.
Well, I think it's taken somewhat of a backseat to the economy as the news gets worse. And if the news continues to get worse, depending on what happens with the economy, that may rise. I think that I have not been particularly comforted by anything that the Democratic candidates have been saying about Iraq, particularly some of the comments in the last debate about ignoring, as Senator Clinton said, the advice of commanders if they disagree with her plans to cut back on troops. I think whoever becomes president is going to inherit a terrible situation in Iraq and needs to handle that responsibly. And I'm not entirely clear that we've seen evidence from either of the Democrats that that's what they are intending to do.
Let's get one more call in here from Bill, who's in Watertown, Massachusetts. Bill, welcome.
Hi, Jane, and crowd. My question is this. Crossover voters, it seems to me, it's my impression that early on, crossover voting may have helped propel Obama in some of the early votes, and that they played a role in the Pennsylvania vote in giving victory in this case to Hillary. Do you have anything to say to that?
All right, Bill, thanks. Mark Halperin, the crossover vote.
Well, I don't know if the caller is talking about the ones who are allegedly doing it at Rush Limbaugh's direction out of mischief, or the ones that are doing it because they're drawn to the Democratic Party because they've turned against President Bush's agenda. Senator Clinton, the exit polls suggest, has been doing better with independents, not in an absolutely linear way, but in as the contests have gone forward, she's done better with independents and, in fact, has won them in some of these states. I think that it depends on the kind of independence. I think they appeal to different kind of independence. She's more likely to appeal to people who were Reagan Democrats and are now Reagan independents. Senator Obama's more likely to appeal to maybe younger people who are independents because they've never been part of a party. And I think we'll see in North Carolina and Indiana, not fully open primaries, but we'll see as they go after them which one has more success and on what issues. I think that is a place where issues do matter, because reaching out to those independents, because it's not about party loyalty, does involve finding things to press the right buttons or to appeal in a way that is uplifting.
As a follow-up to that, in our last 30 seconds, Ruth Marcus, what is the key vote in November?
What is the key?
The key vote, who's this year's soccer mom or NASCAR dad? I mean, what is the key vote coming up in November?
I think actually it's the old Reagan Democrat vote, and those are folks who John McCain is gunning for and shooting to get, and those are folks that I think the Democratic nominee is going to have to win if he or she is going to become president.
Ruth Marcus from The Washington Post. Always great to have you, Ruth. Thanks so much for your insights.
Thanks a lot,
really
Jane.
Really appreciate it. Mark Halperin from Time Magazine. Great to have you, Mark. Thanks.
Great to talk to you, Jane.
And Jack Beatty, as always, great to see you. Thanks.
Nice to see you. Thank you.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.